great emphasis on the sanctity of property, what we call in Arabic mal, and the plural of that is amwal, and its ownership. No one has the right to take the property, money, or labor of another person without the permission or without his permission. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, O you who believe, ya ayyuhal mu'mineen, do not devour your property among yourselves falsely, except that it be trading by your mutual consent. Mutual consent is the crucial means for the exchange of any commodity or service between two persons. A Muslim, in the ethical sense, is one from whose hands and tongue other Muslims are protected. Or I would like to continue with that hadith and say, other human beings are protected. And I would like to go even deeper than that and would say, a Muslim in the ethical sense is one from whose hands and tongue other Muslims, other human beings, other plants, animals, and minerals of this earth are protected. Protection from hands does not only mean protection from physical harm, it also includes the protection from theft. You're not allowed to destroy the environment. You're not allowed to kill animals without any right, without any benefit for your sake. People in the past would kill animals because they would kill animals in the past just because they were food. They would eat them. Now today we are killing animals and we have reached to the level of extinction of some animals because of their skin, because of their ivory. That is not acceptable. We're destroying our earth. And in the Muslim Ummah, I'm talking about the Muslim Ummah right now, we are destroying our environment because of things that we do not need or because of our greed. This sanctity of the property is not just for Muslims. It includes the non-Muslims also. There is a very well-known law in the Sharia which says that the mal, the property of a kafir who is making war against the Muslims, has no sanctity. But some Muslims who have immigrated to the West use this law, this principle in the Sharia, which talks specifically about those kuffar who are waging war against the Muslims. They use that principle in the West, that we are allowed to steal from non-Muslims while we live in the same society. Me as a Swedish or a Muslim American or a Muslim Canadian or a Muslim French or a Muslim Czech, a Muslim from Switzerland, I am not allowed to steal from people who are non-Muslims in the same society that we are living in. That is not correct. That is actually haram. So those Muslims who use that principle falsely to excuse their stealing whenever the opportunity shows itself, that is completely wrong. That is strongly discouraged. This reason is based on two reasons only, which I will mention, inshallah, in future programs. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. All I need, all I need, all I need, all I need. Oh, 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 oh. All I need to be all I need. And I know that you see how much you mean to me. 'Cause your love is all I need.
love is all I need.
Round the world with reporters.
Iranian experts and ophthalmologists have gathered in Tehran to unveil a new method in eye surgery which enables the doctors to cure problems in their offices without anesthesia and bleeding. Paniz Plexer offers an alternative to invasive surgical procedures, reducing recovery time and any complications that can arise before and after surgery. It is an innovative development in eye treatments by utilizing the fourth state of matter, or plasma.
This new technique that uses plasma is being practiced for the first time. Within the past 20 years, plasma has been used in dentistry, treatment of cancer, and scar healing. Since some years ago, we decided to use it in ophthalmology to make sure it is safe. Almost 15 eye diseases can be cured at the doctor's office without going to the surgery room.
This is an international event to unveil a low-cost method for eye disorder treatments. It is a pain-free Iranian method called PANIS, or plasma-assisted non-invasive surgery. This is a result of 5 years of collaboration between two Iranian companies and an Italian counterpart.
This method has been practiced in many countries, but Iranian scientists have now turned it to a method to decrease treatment costs, as it does not need surgery rooms and hospital beds.
Such outstanding achievements show that the sanctions by the West have not been able to slow down Iran's advancement, proving that the Islamic Republic is moving forward on the right track. Humam Abedi, Tehran.
For refugees in reception camps in Greece, it has been a year of fires, double displacement, and now COVID-19. With rolling lockdowns enforced since March, along with restrictions that have only served to make unbearable living conditions even worse. In response to this, independent groups have sprung up and are trying to make a difference. Yellow Days is one of them, empowering forced migrants and changing the narrative surrounding their circumstances lies at the heart of everything they do. The friendships forged during Yellow Days festivals have lasted, and although COVID-19 prevented them from getting together in 2020, the team is still busy making magic happen online.
We have this, you know, distortion and idea of feeling that the refugee community has poor people, they're waiting to be helped, they're just depressed and waiting for answers, and it's far from the reality that I have experienced, especially with all my forced migrant friends. They're people that are active, they're people with loads of skill, power and talent, and all that we do at the Yellow Days is bring all those people together.
Yellow Days is run by a core group of 8 women, which members say is one of its most important aspects. One of the primary goals of groups like this is creating a model for a more sustainable future, not only for forced migrants and minorities, but the entire human race.
Because our system of capitalism and white supremacy, what we definitely know is that we can't rely on governments to help, and the media propaganda machine is so well-financed and consistent that we are lacking not just political will but also human will. And I think this isn't really a time this year with COVID and 2020, this has also been a time for people to start waking up to their own power.
The International Rescue Committee says depression, post-traumatic stress disorder and self-harm that are the byproducts of hopelessness and despair have spiked amid COVID-19 restrictions. With the majority of asylum applications on pause, there's no means of escape, and during COVID-19, self-isolating often means being locked in a shipping container with many others.
More than half of those surveyed said that COVID has caused them depression, worry, anxiety and loneliness.
Every year, tens of thousands of refugees reach Greek shores. The media has aided the dehumanization of asylum seekers by reducing them to just that, a statistic. But there are still those fighting for stories to be told and lives celebrated. Bianca Rahimi, London.
On Friday, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, came down hard on the United States and its allies over their years-long sanctions against the Iranian people. Ayatollah Khamenei has stressed that the measures are based on a baseless animosity and have to be lifted right away. Iran's leader noted that setting conditions for the removal of sanctions is nonsense. He said a possible U.S. return to the 2015 nuclear deal would be meaningless if the sanctions stay in place. Ayatollah Khamenei threw his weight behind a recent move by the Iranian government to scale down its commitments under the deal known as the JCPOA, saying that Tehran will not accept any obligations without reciprocal measures, adding that it would be meaningless for the Islamic Republic to implement all its commitments under the JCPOA when the other side implements almost none of its. Ayatollah Khamenei slammed comments made by some Western countries over Iran's regional policies. He has stressed that Tehran will continue to play its role for regional stability, like its recent contribution to Iraq and Syria that led to the defeat of the Daesh terrorist group there. The Iran leader said that it is the U.S. that finds its interest in destabilizing the region, noting that such plots have been explicitly stated by some American thinkers, including someone from the American Enterprise Institute. Speaking on Iran's defense capabilities, Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the country is strong enough now to deter a war similar to the one launched by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein with arms and backing of the West in the 1980s. Iran's leader then touched upon recent developments surrounding the U.S. presidential election, saying the so-called American values and democracy have turned into a laughingstock even among American friends. He said what happened in Washington, D.C. was the very thing Americans were planning to incite in Iran over a decade ago.
Outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump has finally declared there will be an orderly transition of power. The news comes after violence in the nation's capital as Trump supporters stormed the Capitol building while lawmakers met to certify President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. World leaders joined the chorus of outrage condemning the outgoing president for stoking the unrest. For weeks he undermined the result, claiming election fraud, and then rallied protesters to head to the Capitol. As angry demonstrators stormed Congress, one woman was shot dead by police and three others died of, quote, medical emergencies. An improvised explosive device was also intercepted by authorities. As the situation deteriorated, fellow Republicans urged Trump to call his protest off. Hours later, he posted a video reiterating his claims of fraud. He also cheered his supporters, saying he loved them and described them as special, but called on them to remain calm and return home. In an unprecedented step, Twitter took down the video and suspended his account, threatening permanent suspension if he continued to violate the social media platform. President of the European Council, Charles Michel, took to Twitter to voice his concerns. He joined world leaders calling for a peaceful transfer of power. Earlier, UK Home Secretary Priti Patel was asked about Trump's role in stoking anger and mistrust in the electoral process.
We've just seen, you know, confidence in democracy being shattered, quite frankly, and there's no justification for the level of violence, full stop, that was on show and has been on display. And people have been assaulted, people have died. The violence, you know, should stop, and he should absolutely condemn everything that has taken place.
In the early hours, Republican Senator Mitt Romney blamed President Trump for inciting a violent insurrection. He also downplayed suggestions of a congressional audit to placate angry Trump supporters.
For any who remain insistent on an audit in order to satisfy the many people who believe that the election was stolen, I'd offer this perspective. No congressional audit is ever going to convince these voters, particularly when the president will continue to say that the election was stolen.
Many predicted unrest, but Wednesday's scenes went beyond expectation. Four people dead, with lawmakers having to cower and abandon the historic building. In less than 2 weeks, President-elect Joe Biden will be inaugurated in the very same building, but with scenes of unrest, authorities will be bracing for more potential chaos, as the world watches the most powerful nation descend into even greater levels of division.
Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, a name that defined Iran's nuclear energy program. The top Iranian nuclear scientist was assassinated in November last year. In terms of who was behind the incident, Iran has from the outset pointed the finger at Israel. Israel has a track record of killing Iranian nuclear scientists since 2010. Fakhrizadeh is the fifth to be targeted. While Iran has revealed that it has tracked down some of those involved in the attack, families of the slain nuclear scientists have separately initiated a lawsuit at Iran's Court for International Affairs, not against Israel, but against the United States, for, quote, systemic support for Israel's terrorist activities against Iran. The lead lawyer of the lawsuit says if the case is certified, Iran can freeze American assets in some countries and transfer them as compensation to the families of the victims.
The families of the slain scientists demand that the masterminds of the attacks be punished. Iran does not recognize Israel as a country, so we filed a lawsuit against the U.S. as the major supporter of Israel's crimes. The case will be reviewed at Iran's Court for International Affairs, and then we will take further legal proceedings at an international scale. This is to relieve part of the pain inflicted on the families of the victims.
Iran says the assassination of its scientists pursues a single goal, to deal a heavy blow to the country's nuclear program. But the emotional side effects are even heavier to bear for the families of the victims. Like 14-year-old Armita, who lost her father when she was only four. She says she will never forgive those who took away her dream. Israel has not commented on any of the assassinations of the Iranian scientists. But as to the last one, it has already spilled the beans on itself. Fakhrizadeh had long been on Israel's hit list. This remark by the Israeli Prime Minister perhaps says it all.
This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Abad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
But this time around, Iran was quick to respond. Days ago, the country resumed enriching uranium to 20% purity, surpassing the 3.67% cap set by the 2015 nuclear deal.
While Tehran interprets the elimination of its nuclear scientists as nothing but an attempt to derail its nuclear program, the hunt for those culpable in Fakhrizadeh assassination is placing the remaining pieces of the puzzle, which observers say is giving stronger clues of an Israeli link to the issue. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
An official ceremony was held at the Assad House for Art and Culture in Damascus, marking the first martyrdom anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Iran's ambassador to Syria delivered a word condemning the assassination crime and asserting that the Iranian people have taken revenge and continue to do so. He also reiterated his country's ongoing support to the Syrian people and army until the full defeat of terror.
The criminal act perpetrated by the U.S. administration is against all international laws and the U.N. Charter. It is an act rejected by the entire world. The assassination proves the failure of the aggressive plot aimed at supporting terrorism and spreading instability in this region.
The event was attended by a wide range of high-ranking officials. Dr. Boutena Shaban, who was representing Syria's President Bashar al-Assad in the ceremony, said the U.S. assassinated General Soleimani out of fear of his successful strategy that undermined their plots in the region, stressing Syrians will learn many lessons from the general's life. On the sideline of the ceremony, an exhibition was held shedding light on General Soleimani's life and focusing on his achievements in the fight against terror in Syria and Iraq in the past decade. A year after Lieutenant General Soleimani's assassination, Syrians are clearly keen to demonstrate their respect to his sacrifices for their country. Ceremonies held across the country express the high level of appreciation everyone here has for what the general had offered for the security of Syrian territories. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
Following the landslide victory of Venezuela's ruling Socialist Party in last December's legislative election, former Information Minister Jorge Rodriguez has now been appointed as the new Speaker of the Nation's Congress, also known as National Assembly. Rodriguez, who is widely regarded as one of President Nicolas Maduro's closest allies, has claimed that the newly elected Congress will work exhaustively to promote the policies of the country's president. The assumption of Rodriguez as head of parliament puts an end to a five-year-long control of the congressional body by the opposition, through which the spat between the executive and the legislative produced political turmoil in the Latin American Republic. Socialist lawmakers praised the designation of Rodriguez, although in the opposition some complain about the new head of parliament. Nonetheless, experts believe that the new parliament is a politically balanced body now. Now that Venezuela's ruling Socialist Party has regained control of the country's Congress, many believe that President Maduro is more stable than ever in his office. While the opposition has hit bottom in political terms, Jesus Silva Caracas.
Unemployment rates among Turkish youth have increased dramatically in the recent period, especially after the outbreak of the new coronavirus pandemic. According to the latest figures released by the Turkish Statistical Institute, the unemployment rate was 12.7% in September 2020. Turkish government says reviving economy is among its priorities amid the pandemic. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has vowed not to allow foreign factors negatively affect the country's economy.
It is not possible for a state to survive in long term with rising unemployment, so we have developed various plans to revive our economy, turning it into one of the 10 largest economies in the world by equal distribution of wealth among our population.
As part of efforts to stop declining employment, the government has banned companies from firing employees during the pandemic. So it prevents us from seeing the direct effect of the coronavirus on unemployment. We cannot see it in numbers, but we can definitely see it on the ground. This is how economists explain.
Unemployment is one of the biggest economic problems in the world, and Turkey is no exception. Despite our government's projects to lower the unemployment rates, unfortunately the number are rising, especially amid the pandemic that has paralyzed the economic sector.
The government say it plans to lower the unemployment rate to 10.9% in 2023. However, it seems that it all depends on how the country plans to recover from a pandemic and the lira crisis. As observers say, the main strength point of the ruling party has been flourishing economy and low unemployment. And now, with the pandemic continuing more and more, the country is witnessing the ruling party's popularity sliding further. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Huge crowds from Damascus countryside flocked to mark the first martyrdom anniversary of Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Held in eastern Ghouta, once a hub for terrorists, residents attended the ceremony to pay tribute as a sign of gratitude for General Soleimani's key role in defeating terror in Syria. Iran's ambassador to Syria condemned the heinous assassination crime, underlining the importance of unity of Muslims against the U.S. and Israeli plots in the region.
They assassinated General Soleimani in a coward way. The crime is against all international laws. They did that because their plans had failed in the region. The assassination only brought them shame and defeat, and will lead to their expulsion from the region.
Speakers praised the general's support to Syria as a key factor for restoring security to many parts of the Arab country.
We have gathered here to honor the memory of Commander Soleimani, who offered Syria valuable services. General Soleimani is a historic hero whose achievements changed the region.
A photograph exhibition was also organized to shed light on General Soleimani's achievements in Syria and Iraq. General Soleimani, assassinated by the U.S. a year ago in Iraq, headed Iranian military advisors in Syria at its government's request, and for years played a pivotal role in defeating terrorism and liberating many towns and villages. In Syria, the memory of General Soleimani reminds everyone of the principles of sacrifice, brotherhood, friendship, and unity. This is just one of many ceremonies held in Syria to commemorate the general and convey a message of respect and appreciation to all his achievements. Hamad Ali, Damascus Countryside.
The executive director of Yemen's petroleum company has held a press conference in the capital Sana'a over Saudi Arabia's blockade. The officials say the company lost over $100 million in 2020 due to the Saudi-led coalition violations and siege and accused the UN of complicity.
The United Nations is providing cover for the Saudi-led coalition's acts of piracy in international waters, and it bears full responsibility for them. The violations are huge, and the fines we have suffered are immense.
The senior official said nearly two dozen petrol ships belonging to Yemen's petroleum company were confiscated by Saudi Arabia in 2020. He said the seizures came despite the fact that the ships all had transit permits from the UN. Yemen's petroleum company said the ships were released after a few months, but Saudi Arabia's quota acts of piracy cost them millions of dollars in delay fines.
The United Nations has become a clear partner in this blockade against the Yemeni people and has come to stand by the coalition of aggression, so it bears responsibility for the humanitarian crisis.
Yemeni officials say the confiscation of ships caused a spike in fuel prices and forced the closure of some services. They also say the delays and lack of fuel pushed the medical sector to collapse and caused a humanitarian crisis. Many people have to wait for days to get fuel for their vehicle and the limited number of petrol stations.
Saudi Arabia's blockade of Yemen has led to the deaths of Yemeni people and is pushing the country further toward what the UN describes as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. This has taken place amid the silence of international organizations. Abdul Latif Al-Washalif, Sana'a.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Science and Policy for Sustainable Development concluded that the Amazon rainforest will collapse and largely become a dry, shrubby plain by 2064. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Tiffany Dong, writer. This article is published under the heading, Amazon Rainforest Will Collapse by 2064, New Study Predicts. Here's the details of this article. The future of the world's largest rainforest looks bleak. A new report for Environment, Science and Policy for Sustainable Development concluded that the Amazon rainforest will collapse and largely become a dry, shrubby plain by 2064. Development, deforestation, and the climate crisis are to blame. Study author and University of Florida geologist Robert Tuvey Walker found, UPI reported. Walker reviewed recent research offering that heavy development in Amazonian nations depleted the forest and threatens to push it over the edge towards destruction. By nature of being a rainforest, the canopy creates its own precipitation. The local environment and inhabitants rely on the fresh water created therein for survival. The ecosystem can recover from smaller periodic droughts, but longer and more severe events are already diminishing the forest's long-term resilience, Interesting Engineering reported. Longer dry seasons, which the rainforest is already experiencing and which are exacerbated by deforestation and the climate crisis, prevent rainforest canopies from recovering from fires. Flammable grasses and shrubs permanently invade and take over the landscape. The tropical rainforest dries out and transforms into a tropical savanna, the study found. A forest cannot survive if its canopy needs more than 4 years to recover from a yearly drought event, Walker wrote in the report. Southern Amazonia can expect to reach a tipping point sometime before 2064 at the current rate of dry season lengthening. Earlier this year, a different study found that the Amazon ecosystem could collapse in less than 50 years, with the deforestation being the primary culprit. According to UPI, Walker's latest review shaved 5 years off from that estimate and gave the most specific date of ecosystem demise ever provided, citing the same reason. Fire, deforestation, and logging are leading causes of tree loss. Industrial-scale cattle, ranching, and soybean production in particular drive the latter. Additionally, illegal gold mining is laying the forest bare and polluting rivers. Brazil's president, Jair Bolsonaro, has been criticized for opening the forest to exploitation and inciting forest destruction. Under Bolsonaro, Amazon deforestation skyrocketed to a 12-year high, and activists warned that he used the pandemic as a smokescreen to undermine protections for the rainforest. Walker criticized Bolsonaro's administration for appearing intent on scrapping all remaining restraints on the unfettered exploitation of Amazonia's natural resources. Walker also estimated that the Amazon has shrunk by about 20% since intense development began and that the dry season has already lengthened in the south by an additional 6.5 days per decade, UPI reported. The study's models predict that Once deforestation reaches 30-50% in southern Amazonia, rainfall in the west will decrease by up to 40%, cementing the deterioration in that environment from lush tropical forest to arid open savanna, Science Alert reported. The best way to think of the forest ecosystem is that it's a pump, Walker told UPI. The forest recycles moisture, which supports regional rainfall. If you continue to destroy the forest, the rainfall amount drops and eventually you wreck the pump. As the forest transforms into a grassland, all the benefits of the massive ecosystem will also disappear and a multi-dimensional catastrophe will ensue, Walker wrote in the study. Primarily, water security will evaporate for over 35 million people living in the region. Science Alert continued. The entire continent's dependency upon Amazonia for fresh water means that the magnitude of the catastrophe will be worse than heretofore imagined, Walker noted in the study. Additionally, many plants and animals in the biodiverse ecosystem will be driven to extinction. Among those could lie new medical discoveries and foods, UPI noted. Timber and other precious resources will also disappear. Finally, and perhaps most alarmingly, according to Science Alert, the forest could lose its ability to store the world's excess carbon, which helps to regulate the climate and planetary temperature. In fact, some predict the world's largest forest will flip from a sink to a source around 2035, the report said. Walker concluded that it was doubtful that the Amazon forest could remain resilient into the future given the layers of threats facing it.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran, for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we are going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise their children Islamically. The main source is the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. And today we have in our studio guest speaker Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qum. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program, Sister Salma.
Wa alaykum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here as well.
Thank you for being here. So we wanted to ask you a question on one of the common problems that we are facing right now. How to deal with inferiority complex in a child, because as we know that there are many children who are facing this, unfortunately.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, that's a good question, because as children grow up and their understanding becomes more, then they don't operate in a way that they're supposed to, like a successful human beings, you know, who are supposed to achieve their goals in life that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala expects from us. So as a child is growing up, especially from the ages of 5 onwards, when he is more understanding,
yeah.
You know, especially of what goes around in the world around him. So he might have this creeping feeling of inferiority complex. Inferiority complex is a feeling of making yourself feel low in front of others, feeling that you can't achieve much, feeling everyone is better than you.
Oh, yeah.
In a very moderate way, it's very good. But it's completely opposite to this complex that could have very detrimental effects. Like in a moderate way, as in feeling that you everyone is better than you, Islam encourages that, yeah. Right? Because you won't look at anybody, you won't look down upon anybody.
You won't feel so proud. You yeah. know that you have some things that you don't have.
Yeah, but that self-confidence is very important to be brought about. And the inferiority complex spoils that. Because you feel, now that you can't achieve much or do much, then what's the use of trying? So the struggle stops.
Yeah.
So as soon as the struggle stops, that's when this feeling of inferiority complex is there. Whilst we are supposed to respect ourselves, because Allah himself has respected us, yeah, has honored us. Like in the Quran we say, وَلَكَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمَ. He has done the kareem and honored us. So we should also look at ourselves as his amanat and honor ourselves and know that we are supposed to achieve something that Allah expects from us. But this inferiority complex makes the whole thing go away.
Yeah, unfortunately. So, and is it us who causes this inferiority complex, or is it due to the surrounding?
Yes, actually the surrounding of a child is mainly the people that he has it. Because when a child is small, we can't say that it's the TV or the media influencing him on building this so-and-so character. It's mostly the surrounding around him, which comprises of the parents and the people around him when the child is small.
Oh.
As he grows up, then yes, the influence of this takes over, which we are going to discuss at length, inshallah, in our future programs.
Inshallah.
But right now, we want to concentrate on inferiority complex. So first of all, life is not always a rosy picture for everyone, you know. Life is full of ups and downs. As you know, Allah has created this life as a bed for imtihan, right?
Yeah.
The good and the bad come across our way, and we are supposed to make the right choices.
Definitely.
And Islam teaches us what are the right choices.
So it can be a rosy place if we accept these problems.
Yeah, completely. But of course, according to our inclination,
yeah.
We would still like to be happy, to live in contentment. I mean, to have the best, you know.
Definitely.
And of course, that is itself an imtihan for the people who have the ma'rifah, the knowledge of what Allah has placed as imtihan for us. Good and bad are both imtihan, right?
Very true.
But so, as far as children are concerned, they don't understand this too much. They look at things that, incidents that make them happy, and then they reflect this, that this is what is meant for me,
yeah.
And this is my apt for me, right?
Yeah, you're right. Thank you very much. We're just going to take a short break, and we're going to continue this discussion. Audience, please stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear audience, to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. The show is Islamic Upbringing with our dear sister Salma Khalfan. So we have been talking about how to deal with inferiority complex, and you've been telling us what it is and what causes it.
Yeah.
Before we come to that, just a little explanation about what goes on in a child that builds this, that comes about due to the having this inferiority complex in the first place. So first of all, parents mostly tend to focus on academic and physical well-being of the child. And sometimes the psychological well-being gets ignored, unfortunately. And it is at this phase that inferiority complex can creep in a child's personality, silently and unnoticed.
Oh.
So it is like a psychological disorder which normal people have. It's not like something to be treated unless it gets so much out of hand that you need psychological treatment from a psychologist or something like that, or from an expert.
And I think this is happening a lot, that parents are focusing too much on these other things and are not realizing how much damage it's causing.
Yeah, the emotional connection is not so strong. Mostly, they want the children to be successful, so they concentrate on the physical well-being, what things he needs, what school he has to go to,
comparing
academic
them.
Performance, all these things. That'll come later, inshallah, the comparisons that are made. Also, of course, influences a great deal on building up this inferiority complex.
Yeah.
So it is a psychological disorder when one feels inferior to others and he feels worthless. So he's very underconfident. He's not able to do much. And, sometimes we see feeling remains until adulthood. Unfortunately, some children are like now adults, but they still feel that, I'm not good enough. Mm. What can I do? I'm worthless. Inside, they feel that. They're always looking out for things to fill the gap. We'll talk about what they look for, how they look for attention.
And if, something wrong happens, they break. They feel like they're useless, they're worthless, because they weren't able to achieve that. Well, the whole process is standing up again and trying harder.
Yes, that's right. And parents can deal with that. That's why we're talking about this as a whole. So one isolated incident in life is not usually enough to trigger this lifetime of difficulties that is like the inferiority complex brings about. One incident does not bring up that. For example, if one or two times the parents compare a child, which we're going to talk about, the causes of this inferiority complex, it doesn't bring about this inferiority complex in him. No. It's a series of difficulties, a series of events during childhood that lead to such an issue. Oh. And the main causes of this disorder are often found in the external oppressors. External oppressors, as in how he's being dealt with, in the outside world. As far as the people are concerned, his parents, his grandparents, his siblings, his teachers, all these have a great role to play.
So it's like they don't realize what they're doing or the detrimental effects, because it's slowly, slowly building up and forming.
Yeah, it's slowly, slowly, creepingly building up, and there's no stop to it. Yeah. That's why we said once and twice, it doesn't really bring this disorder, kind of disorder that is not something that needs to be treated. It's just a disorder that Islam really doesn't approve of it. He wants people to respect themselves. That izzat enough that we talked about in the previous sessions. That inferiority complex, if it's there, that izzat enough would be there. Respect for yourself would be there. So parental attitudes towards a child are one of the largest contributions to this inferiority complex. That is the thing. Parental guidance. Mm. That is the main influence that they are playing to, shape this attitude of inferiority complex, or to remove that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, sometimes parents will feel like, oh, we have so much on our head, we can't do all of this. But when we get children, we realize that, if we want to give 100%, we are able to. We can try. Yeah. However much is possible. We're not saying that do all of it, and if you don't, your child will come out bad.
Yeah.
No, as long as you try, then Allah is going to help,
Yeah, and parents are normally perfectionists. They want the child to have the best. So this negative behavior comes about. Negative remarks and an emphasis upon mistakes and feelings can change the lifetime outlook and attitude of a child before he or she reaches the age of 6, 7, 8, and that's when the child matures now, understands more, and now is feeling that is she appreciated or not. He wants the appreciation from the parents, from the friends, from the teachers.
Yeah.
Even I know of a child who was so intelligent, but because of being mistreated and behaved negatively with by the teacher, he lagged for so many years until his potential came out at a very high age, when he was like a big man and he prayed so much to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give this potential in him, make him active and everything. Alhamdulillah, now he's serving Islam in a wonderful, unique way.
Alhamdulillah, mashallah.
But this happens even due to the teacher's upbringing.
Yeah.
So it's not only the parents, the teachers can also have a role. Inshallah, we are going to talk more about that.
Inshallah. Okay, so we are just going to take a short break. And inshallah, we will be back for more on this topic just after the break.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Honor your children and teach them good manners."
Okay, so you're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing. So we have been talking about how to deal with inferiority complex in a child, and you say that because parents tend to lag in, you know, or forget about the psychological aspect and the detrimental effects that are caused by negative remarks or just generally how they're dealing with the child. So you are telling us those kind of negative effects.
Yeah. I'd like to start with some symptoms that such children have so that parents can know that whether the children have this inferiority complex or not, and probably deal with that in the right time before it's, you know, starts creeping in and becomes like more stronger, and then it's very hard to take it out. So one of the sign is the child feels very timid and unworthy, like cowardly.
Oh.
He feels he can't join a group and win or take part in a competition. He feels like he's, you know, like who will probably regard him, this kind of feeling.
So he's not strong.
He's not strong. He's timid. He's, you know, shy, extra shy, of course. The shyness is okay, but extra shyness.
Yeah.
And then hates meeting children of his age.
Oh.
He feels that, what's the use, you know? A child with that, if you go and see with those kind of signs, is really mistreated at home in this way. He's given this feeling of being nagged at always that, you know, why did you do this? Being compared, it. Look at your age mates, you know, being always, you know, reprimanded.
That's true. I mean, I think I've heard of a story about somebody who generally would be mistreated outside and all, but when she would go back home, her parents would treat her like a queen, and that's why you'd never see these kind of symptoms that you're mentioning.
Alhamdulillah, yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah, so inshallah that we are able to, you know, work on this. And I'm sorry to cut you short, but unfortunately that's all the time that we have. Inshallah, we will continue this in our next episode. Dear audience, thank you for joining us on the program. If you have any questions, comments or suggestions, please contact us at our email englishradio@irib.ir and visit us at our website parstoday.com. Inshallah, till the next episode. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned, perfect with no flaws at all, are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.